Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore! It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
Oh, the Joker, baby!
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 113. Today, we got Clemmer on. We're going to be talking some news, and then we're going to do a draft of the best movies from 2010 to 2014. What's the five-year version of a decade? Like Quinn something? Quinnade? That doesn't sound right. That sounds like a drink.
Half decade? I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like there should be a term, though. But we're doing that's our next grouping we have up, so we're going to do that. Try to think. We had some... Oh, and we also have an interview with Arian Moyed from Stewie from Succession. Very cool interview. Oh, yeah. Very funny dude.
Dude, he was awesome. He's one of my favorite interviews we've had in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Like, super down to earth. Very funny.
But yeah, no, like his like insight on like stage acting versus like acting on screen, like behind the scenes of like going from the page to the screen on Succession and like how they filmed it, like going, like using film instead of digital. Yeah, it was an awesome interview. And of course, like got to tell him like my favorite line, like, I'm Team Ken, baby.
Team Ken, man. Big time Team Ken guy. I forget. You were a big time Barry guy, right? Clemmer?
Yeah. Until the last season. It was very disappointing. Yeah.
It's weird. Barry's a tough show to grade because, like, the first, let me talk about this. I feel like we've said this a trillion times, but, like, the first two episodes of, or first two seasons of that show are just a totally different show than the second two seasons. And, like, to me, like, I like the separate sections individually, but as a whole for the show of Barry, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand it.
The third season was fine. It was different, but it was fine. I wish it ended there. It was a great endpoint. The season finale of season three is fantastic. Would have been a great way to end the series. Season four was just a complete disaster. We're talking Parks and Rec last season, Lost the last season, just some of the great complete disaster final seasons in TV history.
I'd say every season's Lost after like three. The first three seasons of Lost I love.
Oh, so good.
And there's then, still like, stuff. There's still stuff to like really like in that though.
The best scene after that, which was I think when Ben's daughter died or got killed or whatever. Like that was like the best moment between season three and the end. And by the way, I saw Ben, the guy who played Ben, walking in front of her office when on the way to work the other day. Really weird.
That's random.
He did like a CBS show for like a lot of years, right? Yeah. I'm sure, he probably made
with
a
Jim
fortune.
Caviezel.
Yeah, I'm sure those shows pay money, so good for him.
Person of interest, I think.
Yes.
Right. It was like them two, I think they had some sort of database of pre-crime or something like that. It was really, I never watched an episode, but I remember the trailers playing nonstop.
Yes. Whenever you watch like football on Sundays, like CBS, and like you see Person of Interest a lot. I was never interested.
Yeah. I like the actor though. Ben, character of Ben was cool.
Yes.
Whatever that's worth. But yeah, we do have some movie news to get to. The first of which being like every single movie got delayed. Every major tentpole movie, Deadpool 3 moved from November 8th, 2024 to May 2024. Captain America: Brave New World to July 2024. Thunderbolts to 2024. Blade to 2025. Fantastic Four to 2025. Avengers: Kang Dynasty to 2026. although they might not have much to do with the writer's strike as much as the rest of these ones. Secret Wars to 2027, Avatar from 2024 to 2025, and they said that was it, the fifth film is going to come out in 2031. It's crazy that they have that even on the timeline. Batman 2 got moved. Mission Impossible 8 had to stop filming. The Safdie Brothers' new Sandler movie got delayed as well. A lot of shit going by the wayside. Which, like, if you're a studio, pay the writers, dude. It's fucking, it's outrageous at this point. You get nothing when you don't have these writer strikes. You see how bad TV and movies can get when you don't have them. You get Friday Night Lights and shit like that. So,
yeah, true. I see a positive here with some of this. Mm-hmm. We have all these franchises that, you know, why are they making these movies? Simply to make money. It's not about being creative. It's not about being interesting. It's just about just, you know, making a shit ton of money. I'm hoping that maybe some scripts that are sitting there already, they can go forward with. I don't know. I mean, I agree 100%, Ken Jack, pay the writers. This is stupid. But I'm hoping that, I don't know, maybe we can get some more interesting creative movies out there that will, you know, that would have been ignored otherwise or wouldn't have been greenlit otherwise that maybe now they'll move ahead with. I don't know. I was looking through the list of the things that got pushed, and it's like, I don't know. Some of these franchises are in trouble too. Like Marvel's kind of in a creative lull. Star Wars feels like it's kind of the same thing. Like maybe it's good we get a little pause here with some of these, and maybe they can kind of refresh and recharge their batteries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is dangerous waters for Marvel. Very, like, it's obviously been rocky for them the past few years, like trying to find their footing after Endgame. And the public interest has clearly waned. Like, there's just no denying it at this point. Like, box office tells you so. The just general online discourse, like social engagement on these posts, like tells you so. So if you're moving the Avengers movie back to, what is it, 2026 now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last one we got was 2020, 2019.
Yes.
It was pre-pandemic.
Yeah, so, for sure pre-pandemic. Yeah, 2019.
I think not, and this isn't just Marvel, but this is DC too. I could see, like Clemmer was saying, like the superhero genre, I think, could be taking a big hit here. Like, I just think the interest, if it's not in front of their face 24/7, I don't know. I did see someone bring up an interesting theory that if these movies continue to underperform, which me and Ken Jack were talking about The Flash before this, I think The Flash is going to underperform massively.
Really?
Even based off the expectations, like the reviews don't help. Like the audience reviews are good, but the critic pushback has not been great for like how people are talking about it right now.
Audience is down to 60 in the 60% right now. The audience score is crazy.
So it was high, but now I guess it's already taking a hit after premieres. People are saying Marvel DC team up maybe in the near future to kind of revitalize things. I don't know.
Two wrongs don't make a right.
No, they don't. They don't.
It's very true. Although gotta admit, like, they could throw out the sloppiest, grossest DC Marvel superhero Avengers team up movie, and it would make $1 trillion. Like, it would be insane.
I mean, exactly. I'm gonna go see The Flash. Like, I'm excited to see Michael Keaton be Batman again. And maybe that's stupid. Maybe that's not a reason to go buy a movie ticket, but I'm gonna do it. I'm excited.
The Flash today.
No, but I do think it's time to accept that Endgame was likely the peak. Mm-hmm. Like, that was likely the peak, at least of like how high can this genre go? I think that right there is not going to be topped.
Yeah, I agree with that. The rest of these, though, like Avatar, it's not like one where I'm like, I cannot fucking wait for the next Avatar. Are you kidding me? Like, Mission Impossible is the one out of all of these where that hurts the most, especially after just constantly getting nonstop hype about Dead Reckoning Part 1. They're on pause for the strike. The Safdie Brothers, anything Safdie Brothers, I definitely want to come out sooner rather than later because they rock. And then I'm trying to think of what else in here. Like, Blade with Mahershala Ali has gone through so many issues already. But like, that's one where I feel like no matter what, I will be excited for it because Mahershala Ali is like a top flight actor, and the character of Blade, and like, for what it's worth, I just love the Blade movies. Like, I would love this combination of actor and IP, I guess. So I'm pumped for that. But like, it being delayed is still, I guess, good because they wrote out the entire script and then threw it out, right? Because Mahershala Ali didn't like it, if I remember right.
Threw it out. Like, they were supposed to start production last year in like November, and like 2 weeks before they were going to start, they were just like, nope.
So when's this strike going to end? Like, so just from a TV perspective, TV typically doesn't really care how it does in this summer. But, like, the fall they do, like, is this going to just last until Labor Day? Like, what are we looking at here?
I got no idea. How long did the last one last? Did it go,
100 days, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah. And I think it's going to happen, once the first, wave, maybe, of really dumpy, episodes or sitcoms or whatever, once those start coming out and all those other nightly shows not being on for the strike, once that really hits home for them, I think maybe then that's where it happens. But I don't think that the writers are going to get a deal that's maybe even fair. They deserve residuals on streaming, which is there's no doubt about that. And that's one of their biggest points. Fucking crazy that they don't. And I just in my brain, I feel like the streamers are so fucking greedy. I can't see them acquiescing to that. But they should, because I mean these shows, so many of them get a second life. I'm a good example, even The Office. The Office performed fine, great, right, on NBC, and then it gets a totally different second life on Netflix, where it explodes three times over the viewership that it had on NBC, and the writers don't see a dime of that, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's criminal. It's wrong, and you're absolutely right. And you know, the networks are still losing money. Saturday Night Live, I know it's not what it used to be, but it's still an incredibly profitable show for NBC. They've lost, a quarter of a season. It got wiped away because of the strike. So I got to imagine their pocketbooks are getting hurt here. I'm shocked it's come to this. Maybe I shouldn't be. Everyone's so greedy. I don't know. The whole thing kind of bums me out, but you're absolutely right, Kenjack. The idea that the streamers, that's pretty basic business. I think it's wrong. We all agree.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that was the most telling thing from these delays, was that the industry clearly believes that this strike is going to go a bit longer, mm-hmm. quite a bit.
Right. I agree. And I think when this is going to be, if you someone that enjoys TV, enjoys kind of, watching, if you're expecting new material to come out in the fall, because it takes a while to make these things, we're going to really pay the price at the end of this calendar year. From mm-hmm. what's happening now, and even longer if it keeps going longer.
I think too, what's kind of interesting about the strike versus even the last one, plenty of actors and other people outside of the writers group supported the last strike, but I feel like in this one the public pressure is on so much more for actors and for directors and for other people in the industry to come out and support the writers as well. So maybe that helps put more pressure on them too. And if you're seen as someone, if you're an actor right now and you were to say yeah, I think the writers should just take what they should get and go do their jobs. They would be ostracized forever. Nobody would ever want to work with them. Yeah. So all these people, even if you're not supporting them, I feel like passive non-support, I feel like they'd be pissed about. So I think that does help their case big time, which is cool.
We need to get Dave out there on the front lines.
Exactly. Yeah, he ended it in a day.
Well, hours.
Yeah.
Listen. Dave just goes to the front line, starts yelling at what's Netflix's guy, Reed Hastings.
Yeah. David Zaslav.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Yeah, so that's the big-ass delays. Speaking of Mission Impossible, this fucking cat biting all these things. Jesus. Mission Impossible dropped a cool behind-the-scenes little bit of it was him. It was Tom Cruise and Hayley Atwell doing this crazy car stunt in Rome. All practical, all real. And like they say in the thing, Christopher McQuarrie is we want the audience to have an actual immersion. So all this is going to be real shit. We're not going to CGI a shitty car in front of you. We're going to show you Tom Cruise literally drifting with one hand while handcuffed literally to Hayley Atwell. Because he's a maniac. And this is why Tom Cruise, we talk about it all the time, last big movie star, the last movie star that maybe will ever exist, because he's that dedicated to the craft and just so dedicated to the revival of this franchise, which whatever you want to say about Mission Impossible, the first one, I like the first one.
Me too.
We kind of a dip big time. And then it really revived and made what I would say Dead Reckoning or Fallout is the best of the franchise by far. And that's the sixth entry in a fucking franchise. That's crazy.
Yeah, it went to a different gear, you know, like Ghost Protocol, and like it just it became something even bigger than it was.
You get rid of him, he's like biting all your shit. Towels. Jesus.
You are not muted at all.
I thought I pressed mute, but like this cat is just sitting here eating everything on the counter. He's eating paper towels. He has like a gift here. He's just eating the entire bag. Just watching it happen.
Garfield, no. Garfy.
This dude's unbelievable.
Right?
He's eating cardboard and paper towel. Jesus, dude.
Clipper, where were you? You were saying,
sorry.
Yeah, they get better. I mean, they have.
Yeah, it's just, you're right. Just like they leveled up. Like they became like events even more than just like kind of being a traditional action fair, which is what they kind of were. They were better than the average action movie. They were fine. And then they became this so I'm more excited for that than almost anything else this summer, right? Like, and you know it's going to be insane. You know, Tom Cruise is just out of his mind. Like, it's just, he's going to die. It's going to be like, oh no, like, you know, Tom Cruise, you know, fell off a cliff trying to do this crazy stunt. But until that happens, I mean, I'm here for it. I'm so excited for this movie.
He is so committed to, I don't know if you guys saw the video. It was from the Top Gun Maverick press tour. I don't know why it popped back up recently, but it was on my timeline. It's like someone like asked them like, oh, what came into the decision to, you know, release this in theaters versus putting on a streamer. And he was like listening and you can just see his face, like just, he like clenches his jaw so tight at the word streamer. It's so fun. Like he is so committed to the theater experience and like making you feel overwhelmed and giving you that like feeling that you had when you were a kid seeing like big movies for the first time, that I really hope he never stops. Like I hope he dies doing this, but like I hope he goes to his grave like he's still pushing out these movies at the age of 85. Like he wants to save the theater experience more than anything. I think that's what he's really committed to more than anything else. He wants to save like that experience of going to the movies. So I love the man. I love him for that.
Mm-hmm. Nothing but respect for Tom Cruise. I think we're all big fans. And you had a big debate on Double Play, right? About Tom Cruise versus Tom Hanks in the 90s.
Yeah. Brandon was saying Tom Hanks was the bigger movie star. I think Tom Cruise is the bigger movie star of the 90s. Tom Hanks was a better actor. And Tom Hanks has a better arsenal of movies, but a lot of those movies aren't necessarily because Tom Hanks was in them. It was because Steven Spielberg directed it or became a cultural thing like Forrest Gump. Like, Tom Cruise is the reason Jerry Maguire made a shit ton of money. Like, Tom Cruise is the reason The Firm, I know John Grisham, but look at that movie poster. It's fucking Tom Cruise's face. Like, Tom Cruise was so gigantic. I'm 43. I've never seen a movie star in my lifetime as big as Tom Cruise. And I I ever will.
The Firm was like the lowest grossing on his list, and it still made like $200 million. It's crazy.
Yeah. It made over $100 million just domestic, and that's back when $100 million domestic was hard to do. That's when ticket prices were like $4 or $5 to go see a movie. You know, $3 in a matinee, and he was making $100 million. Like, it's crazy, and he, like I said, he always delivers. Like, whether it be A Few Good Men, or I wish he'd do more dramatic stuff. I love the action stuff, but I wish he'd mix in more dramatic stuff. But at the end of the day, Tom Cruise is always going to give you your money's worth on a ticket. Always.
I'll always say him and just talking about the 90s anyway, Interviewing the Vampire, him as Lestat is so goddamn good. Just talking about like pure great dramatic performances, like he was so goddamn great as Lestat. And also even in A Few Good Men.
A Few Good Men. Rain Man.
He's legitimately great in both of those, yeah.
Magnolia amazing. Rain Man, Dustin Hoffman won the Oscar, but Tom Cruise is the better performance. It's a harder performance. It's more complicated. It's more layers. He's the reason that movie is so great. Tom Cruise is awesome. Born on the 4th of July. Tom Cruise was an awesome actor.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yes.
Like, come on. Like, that's where I'm like, he was a much bigger star than Tom Hanks. And right. You can kind of, the argument, I think there's an argument there between him and Hanks as actual actors too. Like, I don't think it's like, I think the general consensus would be Hanks is the better actor, but I don't think it's like that far off.
No, it's not.
I think it's very close.
It's a shame
I honestly think Cruise is better. I think if you're just talking about like the peak of like the best of what I've seen from this actor, I don't think I've seen a peak out of Tom Hanks where it's like this, like you were saying before, like this movie is great because Tom Hanks's performance is so great. Like Philadelphia would probably be the closest to that. like wow, he did a really good job performing as an actor here. But like
Castaway.
Yeah, Castaway is mine. I think Castaway is the best performance of this century.
So Castaway, I'd give that to him for sure. But like when I'm thinking about the heights of Cruise and what he adds to a movie, not just from the movie star presence, but like from like him, his performance and adding to a dramatic scene, like in 4th of July, him when he comes home drunk with to his family and all that stuff, and just starts going off. Like all of these scenes are so good, and like I don't think Tom Hanks could ever do any of those scenes, like ever. You know what I mean? Like
I don't think that Tom Cruise could do some things that Hanks does either. Hanks has more vulnerability. I feel like, although, you know, Born the 4th of July, he's very vulnerable, but I don't know. It's hard because Cruise has changed so much. Like the 21st century Cruise is very different than 20th century Cruise. It's almost like two different careers.
Yeah, I think in my head, Tom Hanks is like, a lot of his roles kind of depend on his ability to be likable. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
He's never in a role where it's like, this guy needs to be like some super in-depth, like, a character where he's like fighting with demons, like all this shit. Like I think that Cruise couldn't do those roles because he doesn't have that level of like likability, you know what I mean, if that makes sense. But like I don't think I can't imagine almost any Tom Cruise role that Tom Hanks could do, like literally none. Like I can't think of a single role.
Road to Perdition, Hanks is playing a more complicated character that he is the good guy, but he's not entirely good. It's
more three-dimensional.
Yeah.
But like, think about any Tom Cruise role from the last like 30 years. Could Tom Hanks replace him without a beat in any of them? No, I don't think so. But I think the opposite could be true.
Tom Cruise is the snowman and Elvis.
Yeah, is snowman Elvis.
He's what?
But think about like a Tom Cruise role. Could Tom Hanks be Ethan Hunt ever at any point in his career? No. No, he would never be able to be that character.
Tom Hanks doesn't have a franchise. I don't count Toy Story. That's a Pixar. Their great technology is the reason that blew up. But Tom Cruise is a franchise because he's a movie star. He's the biggest movie star I've ever seen.
And it's his franchise. Could Tom Hanks do Magnolia? No. Could Tom Hanks do fucking Born the 4th of July? No. Could he do I can't think of anything that Cruise has been the star of that Hanks could replace.
But Cruise couldn't do like Forrest Gump. That would have been.
I mean, we can't act like Forrest Gump is like some massive acting.
No, I agree.
Masterclass, to be fair.
Right.
But like, I think there are some roles of Tom Hanks that Tom Cruise could do. I just don't think the opposite is true at all, for whatever that's worth. But that's been Tom talk, I guess. Just got some Tom talk in. Carrie Fisher has a movie that's going to come out this June 23rd, called Wonderwell, coming of age fairy tale set between modern day Italy and an imaginary realm.
Really?
This movie got a 7-year delay.
I didn't think she was still acting. Where's she been?
No, she's not. She hasn't been acting for a long time. It's crazy. 7-year delay because of VFX problems. I feel like at a certain point, if you have one of your main actors as someone who's deceased, you just got to like 86 it. Be like, it ain't going to work. Like you could do release a movie up to like, I think like 3-4 years is like your max. 7 years after, man.
Dude, Ray Liotta.
Yeah, I know Ray Liotta.
Half his filmography is going to be posthumous.
I have two takeaways from this Carrie Fisher story. First off, I read an article about it, and I guess she was – this was taping during her 60th birthday, and she had a party until 2 a.m. And then it went even later than that because the Italian police shut it down. And then she was dead, 2 months later. It's like, well, at least she had a good time until the end. My second takeaway is that she's the same age as Tom Cruise. We talk about Tom, they're both 60. Well, she was 60 and she's obviously dead for 7 years, and Tom Cruise is still making these crazy action movies. This is wild. Like that Tom Cruise is, it might be immortal at this point.
The literal god. He's a god in a human body.
Listen, those Scientologists, they might be on something.
There might be something there. The last big news thing, the Warner Brothers chief, Michael DeLuca, and Pam Abdi, visited Peter Jackson in New Zealand to discuss Lord of the Rings and reestablish the studio's connection to him. The only thing they have slated right now, other than which isn't their property, Rings of Power, they are doing the anime prequel series, which is 2024. Peter Jackson, like, he made what I would call the greatest trilogy of all time in the first Lord of the Rings trilogy. He also made a very bad trilogy in the Hobbit trilogy. And almost everything he's made since the end of, and since Return of the King debuted, has not been good. Like, I would say nothing really is like good, except for They Shall Not Grow Old, which is really good.
The Beatles one is, he's done some good work there too. He's a very good documentarian.
Yes, documentaries are really, really good. But everything else he's done where it's like, hey, let me do Mortal Engines or whatever, that's been ass. So like, it's not something where like, I'm like, if you're Warner Brothers, like, yeah, Peter Jackson clearly understands this more than anybody. Like, well, the token heads who hate everything hated his franchise. He made one good trilogy, and then got just made a real bad one that, which maybe isn't necessarily his fault, because I assume he wouldn't want to split it up into three movies with
Hobbit. They brought him in really late. Like, I think it was like a month before they were going to start shooting that they brought him in. I can't remember how close to it was, but I do know it was very close.
But like, you could say that, but then it can also be like, how much time did he have for Mortal Engines, which also looked like dog shit.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Does Peter Jackson stink?
Like, he made the greatest trilogy of all time. There's almost no doubt.
Boring people walking with it. No, I agree with you. Right. I'll agree that it was incredibly well received and yes. But you're right. I mean, since then, you got King Kong, The Lovely Bones. I actually think King Kong wasn't as bad as some people think, but it certainly wasn't
very good. I like
the bug. Yeah, the bug in Andy Serkis always gets me. The one with a bug that like slinks out and like eats the dude's head. That always got me.
Lovely Bones kind of stinks. The book was pretty good. The movie was kind of lousy. The Hobbit things, whatever. There's a mess. But like, you look at his career. He's 61 years old now, and you got to wonder, like, he's
the only year older than Tom Cruise.
He outlasted Carrie Fisher. But like, at some point, you're like, is this guy's career like? Is he a one-hit wonder? Like, the Frighteners is pretty good, I guess. It's kind of stunning that he had, you're right, three incredibly well-received movies that were just, you know, the biggest thing at the time. And then since then, he hasn't done shit.
I think you could take a lot of the lessons that he showed, like, was proof positive, like, this is what makes a good Lord of the Rings movie from those three, and give it to somebody else, if that makes sense. Like, he did a lot of, like, his touch is what made those first three so good, and a lot of it is just like, hey, we're gonna get an ass ton of extras here in New Zealand. We're gonna have girls dressed up like dudes as the Rohirrim, like, riding their horses down this thing so it looks and feels more real, and we're gonna use CGI, and, like, that's very well, like, crafted, like, with and he basically built Weta Studios for that. So like, there's a lot of lessons to take, but do I want him to be in charge of another Lord of the Rings movie? Maybe not, but I doubt that's what they want, and I assume that they would want him as like more of an advisor, which I'm okay with. I think
they just gotta, if he's gonna direct more of these things, just keep him away. The big takeaway from these past couple decades is keep him away from CGI. Like, just say, Peter, you're good at the practical stuff. Just keep it practical. I mean, he proved it, like you said.
If you had told me after, I'm sorry, Return of the King. If you told me after Return of the King that he was never going to get nominated for another Best Director Oscar, I would have told you you're fucking crazy. And we're now, what, 16 years out? It's 17, 18 years out, and he hasn't. I'm shocked on how much this guy has, his career is completely disintegrated. I think he's smart to transition to like documentaries. They're very good. Awesome. He obviously he's a smart guy. I just don't know what happened. Maybe you're right, Goose. Maybe it was just he got too in love with the CGI.
I think he's probably like, much like James Cameron, trying to, and like George Lucas, like any of these big like blockbuster franchise directors and producers, like they want to push the technology and like what you can do on screen further. And he just kind of fucked up, I think.
Every franchise from like 2000 to 2000, I would say like 15-ish, like they just thought, I feel like if you were doing a continuation or a sequel of something that maybe you started in the 90s or 80s, whatever, they're like, the only way we can improve this is by doing as much CGI as possible. You know what I mean? Like, we talked about it with like Indy 4. We talked about it with like fucking Star Wars, with Hobbit, with all these things. Like, we can just do all this in CGI and it'll look just as good. People will be impressed by it. And nobody really was. It was just kind of like, it looks like a video game. Like, we use it when you need it. There's no need to be it for like entire landscapes to be replaced by it when you have enough budget to go shoot it on location. Like, that's crazy to me. which is the case.
I also saw this was Warner Brothers asking him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're also trying to get Nolan back.
Warner Brothers is, yeah. They gave him a 7-figure bonus for Tenet. I saw that.
Listen, bring him. I don't know what they're doing over there. Maybe they're making some right moves right now. They're just like, get all the good creatives back.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't blame them for wanting to do that. Especially Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers losing Nolan was the stupidest fucking, well, and a series of horrible decisions by Warner Brothers. Like, they have just been on, regardless of how much good content they end up making with HBO, like, they just series upon series of bad decisions. Okay, so before we get into our draft of movies from 2010 to 14, we're going to do our interview, or show you our interview with Aaron Moyed. He is obviously Stewie from Succession, but many other things. Super, super funny guy. Here he is.
All right, we are joined. Also, my microphone, I'm going to just preface this off the top. My microphone broke through TSA today, so I sound like ass.
No. After 5 years of service, no less.
Yeah, it's 5-6 years that thing lasted.
There you go. Maybe it was time, bro.
Yeah.
Universe is saying enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Explore. It's no more vacations. That's what the universe is.
Thanks for joining us. We got a ton to talk about.
Let's do it.
We are finally, I mean, we're still sad, but I guess we're finally over mourning of Succession. So we'll definitely talk about that for a while. Mm-hmm. But first off, congrats on the Tony nomination.
Thanks, man.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. A Doll's House Tony nomination for acting. And then You Hurt My Feelings. A novelist's longstanding marriage is suddenly upended when she overhears her husband giving his honest reaction to her latest book. You're an actor playing an actor. Is that always more fun, especially, you know, like kind of like the theatery aspect for you? Does that add a nice little layer for you?
Yeah. I don't know how many times I've played an actor, actually. Mm-hmm. It's fun because this actor is not, you know, it's just not working.
Putting lightly, yeah.
And he gets fired a few times, but he's also very real, you know. Yeah. You feel for him. So there's something about I don't know. There's something fun about, you know, Nicole Holofcener, who wrote the movie You Hurt My Feelings, is so smart and so good and so, like, you know, understands like the nuance of it all, that I think that, like, it's really one of those places where I felt very much at home, like playing a guy that wasn't, you know, can't get it off the ground. Can't get it off the ground.
We're really big fans. We're huge fans of Can You Ever Forgive Me? Like, we watched that a million times.
Oh,
one of
yeah.
our favorite movies.
Enough we're, Said is...
Yeah. Enough Said's amazing.
Oh, my God.
Enough Said's amazing.
And you also, I feel like, with the character, because the character is also a theater actor. Yeah. As well, which you, like, that's what roots are. So I feel like that makes it a little bit of an easier sort of adaptation for you, I guess, right?
Totally. And, you know, Nicole and I were constantly... I love that you guys love Holofcener movies. Nicole and I also debated on how good of an actor he actually was.
Oh, okay.
I kind of thought a little, I thought he was worse, and Nicole thought he was better. So there's that scene where I'm like in the play doing a scene, and I was acting worse every time. And she's like, no, he's a little bit better. Yeah. And just like you right now, Nicole had COVID. And she was on Zoom. She was directing us in that movie on fucking Zoom.
That's crazy.
Crazy. Isn't that crazy? And so, yeah, it was insane. But anyway, so I feel, you know, we all know guys. Listen, it's like anything. We all know folks that are trying to do their best, that they really want to get it off the ground. It's hard and not, you know. We got it.
We're big fans. It was an awesome movie too. I think it touches on what's a very relatable sort of subject for anybody and any that's ever been in a relationship ever. I was just curious, has anyone, a loved one, ever panned a work of yours? Ever been like, hey, that wasn't your best. That play, you fucked that one up. Sorry, dude.
You know, that's hilarious. You know, we see a lot of, you know, people in the theater see a lot of plays, and I'm just going to get close so everyone hears me. Not all of them are great. and so I think most people these days are kind of, I think they kind of know how to, like, lie to us a little bit better. Do you know what I mean? They, you know, the people that are the most honest with you are the ones that you love the most. And even in that person, my wife, I will just say, honestly, if you really hated me, I prefer you just lie to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Tell me in 6 months. Like I'm in the middle of the fucking thing. I don't really want to know. I was terrible in this. Especially if it's a play.
Imagine if it was the same situation with you. Like you walked in to surprise your wife somewhere. And like you just hear her being like, oh man, Succession. This Stewie guy sucks. Like,
well, I hear that all the time, actually.
He sucks. The portrayal sucks. He'd be much better if it wasn't him.
Yeah, that'd be hilarious. It'd be so much better if it was this other actor.
Yeah.
It is funny. Actually, I mean, it reminds me of now whenever I think about being done with something, I think of, ironically enough, Succession. I think of the scene where Roman, where the spaceship blows up and he just kind of washes his hands. He doesn't say anything, puts his phone in his pocket and he walks away. I'm like that. Like if a movie's not great, if a role's not great, you're not happy. Like you can, but I like that you said that. If I guess we haven't really asked anyone who's done a stage thing that is not great. Like you still got to keep going out there.
And over and over.
Yeah. So if your wife's like, that's why in the movie, the book is so devastating.
Yeah.
Because the book is
time on it.
The book is there, bro. It's like the book is not going anywhere. The book is there forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And so, yeah, in a way I think, the plays are the worst. I did a production. I'm not going to mention the name. I did a production a few years back. The play was it was a Shakespeare. It did not do well. Mm-hmm. This is at a big old theater and it did not do well. And we weren't getting good reviews and we were getting killed. Mm-hmm. And we still had another 6 weeks.
Oh, that's brutal.
And the play was like 4 hours
can
long.
Can you do anything? Like
yeah,
what?
Drink.
Just do anything to distract yourself from it.
Drink a lot more.
There's nothing else you can do.
I mean, at that point, you can't. It's locked, too. You can't, like, change anything. You can't, like, all of a sudden be like, you know what? I think I want to do an accent. Mm-hmm. It's like, no. We're here.
We just interviewed Anthony Ramos the other day, and he's like, yeah, like, we had to do, like, five of these a week sometimes. And it sucked. It's like, but everyone loved it. Like, even if I feel like at Hamilton at a certain height, like, even if someone didn't love it, they'd still be like, oh, yeah, I loved Hamilton.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Of course.
It's like a certain level of fame.
Of course. That's what I mean. Like, if it's even a hit, you know, if someone didn't like Succession, let's say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Are you going to be that guy?
Yeah.
The biz like, yeah, I didn't, you know. And we know those people like, you know. And so it's like they usually either don't say anything or they just – you know, if you really didn't like the, exactly. If you didn't like it, stop watching it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
We did. We had a guy at the company who was like a big time, a huge Succession hater, like
crazy.
And he's not here anymore. He quit 2 weeks ago.
Wow. Well, you mean he got fired?
Yeah. Everyone was like, well, you don't like this great show. Fuck off. You're literally out of here. Let's talk about it. Again, you hurt my feelings. Yeah. Definitely check it out again. If you haven't seen the movie,
it's a great movie.
It's A24, man. Like they just refuse to miss in any way whatsoever.
Yeah.
And if you we got to ask you this question. We got to ask you this because we've been starting to ask people this because we interviewed Ray Romano a few weeks ago and he directed a movie and he came in guns blazing about the Rotten Tomatoes score. And he was like, he looks at it like it's a stock price.
Yep.
And so we never asked this because, we know, for the most part, it doesn't fully matter, like, in the end. But do you, you kind of just talked about it with stage plays. I'm sure it's a little different because it's ongoing.
Yeah.
But do you ever check? Do you ever, like, is it at all a bit of a pride thing for you?
Well, you know, when you're, I have the privilege of being on some cool things. So the Succession one, we really wanted to see if we can get a, you know, we're all like, are we going to get 100 on this? But it's not, it's so funny. There's an old documentary called Comedians. Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever remember that? Jerry Seinfeld and Ornie Adams were the two like subjects of it. For all your listeners, watch this movie. If you can find it, it's a great doc. But Ray Romano's on that as well. And I can get a sense that he really checks it like it's a stock price. I do not check it like that. I just need to know certified fresh. All right. Yeah. Thank you. Bye. You know, and both, you know, you hurt my feelings that way. The last season was, you know, that way, you know, so it's, I don't really need to know all the deets of all that. I just don't care. After a while, you know, like we were doing A Doll's House and, you know, we were rave reviews. We got nominated for a bunch of things, and if you're the one person that's like, I fucking hated this, it's like, okay, well, everyone else loved it.
You
so
want
to
read like Richard Brody being like, oh, this guy, he insists upon himself for the New York Times. You don't need to hear that from anyone.
I don't really care.
Yeah,
you know, it's out of 95 movie.
Yeah,
so it is.
Okay, there you go. Boom, 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 boom. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
We got to talk Succession, though, obviously.
Yeah.
Your character, one of our favorites, from his first intro, licking a pastry behind the counter, to a line that we liked, and I know Robbie, our producer, loved it. We watched the finale together, and when he goes, Team Ken, baby. What was your favorite Stewie moment from the entire show? And how much room did you have to work with some of the lines too?
I mean, part one of that question, I would say I have so many. I mean, I loved all of them. I loved the scene that we had in Croatia with me and Brian, and me and with Stewie, Logan, and Kendall. I find that scene like a very big thesis of what Jesse Armstrong's kind of going for, of like all of this capitalism is about a little bit more than you. That's what this whole game is. And so I love that scene, and it had some fun stuff in there. Room for improv. You know, one of the writing is so special and so unique that we're also trying to make sure that we have that.
Like, do justice to that.
Yeah. But, and this is a rare thing that I don't think a lot of people know, we shoot on film. And when you shoot on film, you can't, I can be like, can we just stop for a second?
Yeah.
And you'll be fine. And it won't ruin anything and nothing will happen. But you can't do that on film because there's not that much film and it's super expensive. So, and I say that to say that when we do a huge scene, like a 5 or 6 person page scene, and we do all that together, and then you're shooting on film, something's going to go wrong. So you're forced to improvise. Mm-hmm. You're forced to like go with it. And so you have to be fresh and ready, you know, and that is kind of like a big portion of what you're also witnessing. It's actually you're witnessing us shoot this thing on film, and we're so precious of the film that we can't like – so it feels a little dangerous and spontaneous. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's almost like a required bit, but like maybe not in the way that like you would improv on a comedy set, but more like you – it's almost required for you to be on your toes.
You have to be ready.
Okay.
Especially if you have like a big, you know, the funeral scene, 75 million extras. All of a sudden one extra bumps into you and you miss your cue of the thing. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden you got to be like, oh, fuck. Like, I got to improvise something to get to that spot, you know? I do love Team Ken, baby. I'm trying to remember if...
Team Ken, baby.
I remember when we were doing the vote... The writers came in at one point, you know, it's so I was shooting Succession from 4 a.m. to 2 p.m. on the last 3 days of shooting in New York City while doing tech for Doll's House on Broadway. So I'd go from 4 to 1 and then from 2 to like 11, I was on just to do, you know, because they just landed at the same time. There you go. That's Succession for you. But I will say that I remember the writers coming into the room and I think someone said, we think you should say Team Ken, baby. I'm pretty sure that was a line that the writers came up with and not me. But, you know, amazing. Can I tell you another thing that I really, really loved from this season?
Yeah.
It was the scene with me and Ken at the wake the day after. That scene was really amazing because it shows that Ken could only show emotion right now in these weird little spurts, and an old high school buddy,
he coaxed it out of him, I think. Yeah,
makes him laugh.
Yeah,
says, you know, I thought he died because of your Gojo deal you know, and Pierce deal because of your fucking Pierce deal, and then he's you fucking prick, and then that's the thing that breaks. That I think is really great. Just it was a great. Right, that scene is so, I don't know, it's cool because it shows these dudes know each other for a long time. I really love that scene.
We're gonna put you on the spot here. It's a show of a collection of just pieces of shit. The main characters, some unbelievable side characters, whether it's the Stewies, the Nan Pierces, the Carls, this stuff. You got to give me your personal top three, bottom three, likable and least likable characters from the show, in your opinion.
It's a tough one.
Which is not easy because likable is tough. Least likable, I feel like.
Yeah. Least likable is tough. I mean, it's amazing. I'm going to say this, but and whatever. Don't fucking at me. But I'm not a Tom guy.
Uh-huh.
I find those type of people like nails on a chalkboard. Mm-hmm. It's like it's just like everything to do anything to win at the top. You know, I'm just here to serve. Yeah. When he knew he was going to lose in the middle of I'm just here to serve. I hate people. I like people that are loyal. I like people that like have my back. Mm-hmm. He does not have your back. No. I don't like him. I don't like Caroline. Mm-hmm. I think the mom is evil.
Very.
I think the mom is evil to the core.
Them all eating the cheeses and stuff and all the food in the kitchen at the last episode is so funny.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that is funny. And man, I mean, they're all monsters, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They're all monsters. I mean, who would be my third? I mean, I guess Hugo. Hugo kind of sucks ass. You know,
he's so funny too.
He's so good. Yeah, he's so hysterical. Good. It's funny, you know. You can say Roman? Maybe you know Roman has done some evil shit on this show. You know, ripping up that $1 million check in front of a kid is evil. Yeah.
That's just that was evil. So bad.
That's evil. You know, Kendall. I mean, and please don't at me. But listen, man, he killed a kid.
Yep.
And then everyone's like, he didn't kill the kid. He didn't touch the steering wheel. Yeah, he also ran away and didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
So that's got to count for something. He knew he was guilty about something.
Exactly.
That's evil. You know, Shiv is a terrible, you know, spouse.
They're all terrible.
Like, I mean, that's what I mean.
All bad, yeah.
You know.
Can you stamp anyone as likable?
I think by this, you know, I think Stewie's cool as hell.
Stewie is cool.
Stewie will is going to give you the truth. He might go against you, but he's not going to lie about it and backstab mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
He'll still be there if your father dies. You know what I mean? So that's obviously I'm biased about that.
Bodyguard actually, what was the bodyguard?
Oh, I love the bodyguard.
He was great.
Oh, played by the great Scott Nicholson.
Yeah.
Colin.
Colin, yeah.
Colin's
yeah.
amazing.
Colin, he's his best boy. He's Logan's best boy.
He's my best boy. You're my best boy. Oh, you know who? I think the Willa, you know, Connor situation ended up okay, even though I remember reading that in that scene that it's like that they're kind of splitting as well. Like he's gonna go, and I was so bummed by that. But you know, I love that couple.
Yeah.
I think Connor is fun. They're likable.
Yeah. They're more likable than the others, the Roy Sanders.
They are, yeah.
I mean, well, who are your least favorite?
I'll give you my one. I said it. I said it in the middle of the season. I was kind of bummed that we didn't see. And there were so many storylines. I mean, obviously, there was a lot in the end of the season. But I've always been a big Nan Pierce hater. I think
she's great because she puts on the fake.
Yeah, she just it's the fakest. Ugh. Like it's the exact opposite of Stewie. It's all complete like
performative,
healthy garbage.
Yeah. Eight. I don't know. People are throwing numbers. I mean, it's so unbearable. Nine. Cherry Jones, killer actress, killer.
She's the good killer. Person in it. It's so good.
Killer.
We want to hit you with something we call the six pack of rapid fire questions.
Hit me.
The first being, what's a play you think should be adapted into a movie?
Ooh.
There's plenty that we've seen try, maybe it doesn't work. Like we were talking about Cats the other day. Like some ones are too hard, but
that should be adapted into a movie. Oh, that's a brilliant question.
Might end up being the star if you give it a good enough recommendation.
Hold on, that's what I'm doing. You think I don't know what's going on here?
You're auditioning for this.
Man, that is a brilliant, brilliant. My nonprofit did a show called 7 Minutes
mm-hmm.
Last year, which is about 11 female union workers deciding whether or not to reduce their lunch time for their break time from 15 minutes to 7 minutes to save their jobs for a year.
Oh.
And it was one scene. It was like 12 Angry Men, but
I was about to say 12 Angry Men. Yeah,
I've been talking about that at the company a lot. I think that should be turned into a movie stat.
in the, I mean, I know you did the Humans, right? I love the Humans adaptation. I thought it was
great. I wasn't in the Humans adaptation of the movie, so I haven't seen the movie yet. But I will. I will. I heard everyone loves it.
Yeah. What is what's been your weirdest fan interaction so far?
Yeah.
Is it a bathroom?
I'm at a bar where there's like any sort of television playing, any sort of game, I worry that someone's gonna, especially with my kids around,
yeah,
they'll be like, "Hey man, you want to go to the bathroom? You want to go to the bathroom?" some strange ones, you know. I had someone, you know, I just did this play with Jessica Chastain, and mm-hmm. she said that people have done this before, but someone said, "Can you write something on my arm?"
Like a legit sentence?
Like my autograph or something. I just wrote my signature, and she's going to get that tattooed.
Yeah.
I think that's crazy.
Oh my God.
I think that's absolutely nuts. But God bless. God bless you.
What's been your favorite Kendall nonsense line? Because we have corporate jargon line, basically. We have one that we really like.
I want to hear it.
It's fake. It's not real, but it made us laugh. It's from someone on Twitter posted it. Very curious what your thoughts on it are.
On the top here?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean,
the Roman line.
The Roman line's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing.
Christy Yamaguchi main. That was one of our favorites. But what was your favorite one? Like, because he has so many, especially with Stewie.
I mean, you know, oh man, there's so many. It's funny because this scene, it happened. This scene, Kendall, in that scene that I was talking about in Croatia, is basically rattling it off. He's like, "You better have to do the deal. You don't know what kind of titans that you're dealing with. I'm going to cut it." You know, and then he goes into, you know, "Cut my dick off with your nose and poo poo up my nose holes." Yeah. You know, all that shit. You know, like, all that stuff is hilarious. I mean, the stuff in the beginning of this season that they were talking about with that bullshit company, it's like this, like that, like this, but a little bit of that. It's like all of that stuff was so painful to me. It's just so, you know, I wish I had more right on the top of my tongue, but yeah, those are horrendous.
What's a role you auditioned for, really wanted, but didn't get?
I auditioned. Should I say this?
Hilarious. The answer to that is always yes.
Oh man, I don't know if I should say this. I'm gonna give you another one.
Okay.
I auditioned for this is a fun one. I auditioned for the lead of Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh no way, for the Chris Pine role. Yeah.
Oh. I really thought that would be fun.
Yeah,
I mean, awesome. Chris Pine is a superstar, so like it makes total sense. But that would be really, really, really fun.
And the last,
or one, something like that. I'm excited to do something, you know, on that kind of like comedic adventure level.
And the last one, who is a film actor you would love to see try a play? So someone who doesn't come from the theater world really, but like does mostly film or TV, and you'd love to see them do a play.
Yeah. No, I love that.
Like I can't imagine Tom Cruise doing Othello or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
man, that's a great question. You know who I'd love to see in a play? I'd actually love to see Keanu Reeves in a play.
Oh,
that'd be fun.
He is like a multi-hyphenate. He plays like bass for a band. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. I think he'd be good.
Yeah.
I think he, you know why? And this is going to sound really nerdy or whatever, but a deep cutty, but like you have to have like a little, you have to have a little bit of like a spiritual self to like kind of like do a play. Cause like it's a feeling of like a bunch of people in a room. And I bet you he's like Zen to a degree.
Oh my God. I'm picturing him in anything. It would be so good.
So cool. You know who else would be kind of fun in a play? Jack Black.
Yeah.
You know, like give him a big old like Noel Coward comedy.
Did he do School of Rock when they did it? I'm assuming
No. That was Alex Brightman.
Yeah.
So who also did a great job. I think he'd have like a give
big
him a
presence.
Give him a big old musical that he can like. I think that'd be really fun.
Full a cappella if he wanted to. Really.
Yeah, totally. It's so funny. The great actors that you're thinking of, all of them actually started from theater. So it's kind of hard to like. be like, you know, I don't know.
Everyone I can think of in like the top tier, I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy started here.
They all start in the theater.
Yeah.
We got to wrap, but I got to throw one more Kendall on you. I just remembered. I think it is my favorite. Yeah. It's when he's shutting down Valter and he looks at Lawrence and he's like, go find some other chicken coop, cunt. And he just like, then just walks away. And it's so cutting. And it's again, that's a testament to the writing of that show. It's like, it's easy to put a lot of curse words and like swearing in it and make it sound really unrelatable and cringy. Yeah. And it never did that over 4 years.
Oh no. I mean, the word there with a line with so many fucking swears in this thing is one of the lines that's most talked about is Logan saying, like,
fuck off or even, or
no, like no, that. But it's not even that cutting. It's like, you're not serious people. Talk about cutting.
Yep.
It's like,
I was like, I love you too.
He goes, I love you, but you're not serious people.
Yep.
And that, like that in a lot, in a show of just so many insults, that feels so brutal. It just feels like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
It's the school grade level being like, you're a loser.
You're a loser.
Like, you're just,
you are actually a fucking loser.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much, man. Again, congrats on the nomination. Check out You Hurt My Feelings. Anytime. We love to
talk
to you.
Let's
awesome.
Do it again.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
Thanks to Arian. He was awesome. Super, super cool. Very funny. Down to earth. I didn't know until we started, or at least until I started like researching to write questions, that he had such like a theater background. And it's cool talking to him about that stuff. I'd love to have him back and just do a lot of theater talk. So that's Arian. Cool dude. Right?
Yeah, no, I want to bring him back. I would love to, and I said this after the interview, I'd love to have more of those like Broadway people that are like just in town doing a quick run on Broadway, have him pop over. Because you could tell he wasn't worn down by like a press junket, if that makes sense. Like those Broadway people aren't doing like these massive, like what they'll do is they'll sit through like 30 interviews in a day and you don't know when in line you're getting them. They've probably already done 10 to 20 and they're just tired. Like, no one's going to be fresh after that. So,
yeah.
Wouldn't hate it.
Yeah, I'm into it. Again, I think we mentioned this to you in our group chat too. Every time we do get interviewed or get offered theater people, it's like, here's Murpo Blurpo. He played the tree in like Romeo and Juliet off Broadway. It's like, oh, okay.
Calm down. I love Blurpo. I think his work is very good.
Murpo, big fan.
We're talking one of the great talents. Let's dial it back. Relax.
Are you talking about the 2007 Murpo Blurpo? Or are you talking about the 1983?
Peak. I mean, we all agree on that.
The original.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations. So when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today. Taste the difference and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
Let's do our draft. I did the order ahead of time. It's going to be Clemmer, then Robbie, then me. 2010 to 2014 movies. Have Clemmer back, obviously back again after we did the last 5 years. So you get to go first.
This was
eight picks, by the way. We did mention this ahead of time. Yeah, eight picks.
Yeah, I was texting with Kenjack, and this, I thought this was supposed to be easy to put together. Hard, like, oh, maybe it won't be enough good films. I ended up having this crazy long list. Yeah. There's way more good movies than I would have thought in this time period. So this should be fun. My 1-1 is going to be The Social Network. I mean, this is the most important film of this century. There's no film I think that embodies kind of this time, this place that we are in and we have been in. Then that movie, it's Fincher at his best, obviously. You have amazing performances. You have incredible score. And it also just speaks to a very specific time that we've all lived through that I wonder if our grandkids or our kids are going to look at it and be like, what is that like? And the first thing I would do is I pop on this movie. It's brilliant.
It truly is. I mean, do the inaccuracies bother you all? Because it is highly inaccurate.
Don't care.
No, it's not about that.
It doesn't bother me at all.
Like, it's about our mindset at that time. It's about what we went through as a country, you know, especially younger people at that time, just kind of like figuring this shit out and like what this was. It speaks to a specific time and place, not a specific story, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone was great in that, too. That wasn't just the Eisenberg show or something. Like, Garfield was so good. Oh, my God. Dude,
fucking Justin Timberlake shows up and delivers the performance of his lifetime. I mean,
yeah.
Incredible.
Yes.
I saw I follow a really cool account on Twitter. It's called Movie Lutz, like, basically the coloring. And they posted a really cool breakdown of, like, the color red in the movie, which I'd never noticed before. And it's, like, every scene with Justin Timberlake's character, what's his face from Napster? Napster guy. There's red in the scene. Like, he's either wearing a red shirt or the background behind him in the sushi restaurant. It's red. Everything he's doing is red. And it's like just indicative of him being the villain, him like being incendiary. Like, there's so many smart things tucked away in that movie. And that goes to show, like, not just the cast like was on point. Like, you got Fincher as a brilliant director. You got Sorkin writing. Cinematography is brilliant. Like, that movie is as close to perfect, if not perfect, as you can get.
Yeah, I just go off that account now too, Gooch. That, I was just looking. That account looks awesome. I love stuff like that. I love how directors use color and what they do with that. That's a great one.
Yeah, they do some cool. They'll also post videos. It's really awesome. They'll like flip the color grading. Like, they'll take like the color grading from Blade Runner 2049, what it would look like if you flipped it with Dunkirk or something like that.
That's cool. I like that.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
All right. Gooch, you're up.
So, like Clemmer was saying, there's way more great movies than I was expecting to find here. So I don't think you can really go wrong. I am going to go Django, though.
You fucker.
I'm just getting
my number one of all.
Django, probably not my favorite Tarantino movie, but there's so many great ones that it's like, whatever. And that speaks to his strength as a director and writer. It's like, even his, I don't think this is a top three movie of his, and it's, yeah, it's in my top three from this 5-year period. Django is fucking awesome. It fucking rules. I love Westerns. This is like pulpy Western. It's Jamie Foxx is fucking brilliant. And not just Jamie Foxx. Leo, is it Leo's best performance? Him as Calvin Candy? He is fucking amazing. Unreal. In that movie.
Yeah.
He's
a few times he plays a bad guy too.
He is terrifying. He's diminutive. Obviously, so it's kind of tough for him to play a villain because he's got that baby face. He's small, soft-spoken, but he fucking he's so scary. And then Christoph Waltz. I mean, what a run he him going from Inglourious Basterds to Django is still just crazy and not doing really much sense. Like, you want to talk about Peter Jackson falling off? Christoph Waltz.
Yeah.
I mean, Two of the greatest performances of the 21st century, and then I don't
The spear.
Alita.
He got fucked by a writer's strike movie. He got fucked by a writer's strike movie with Quantum of Solace.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Dude, full circle.
Quantum of Solace writer's strike thing is very. It is that one's insane that they tried to just shoot through it.
Yeah,
like, and it's Daniel Craig on set writing lines.
I don't give Django enough credit. I always compare it to Inglourious Basterds because of Christoph Waltz thing, and I like Inglourious more. So in my mind, like, I always have Django as like this minor league movie, but it's not. It's a great movie. It's a fantastic movie, and I need to do a better job myself of like separating the two. Now, Inglourious Basterds is a better movie, but it doesn't mean Django is not awesome too. And for some reason, I just kind of I deflated too much. But Django is awesome. I rewatched it about a year ago, and you know, for like whatever the 80th so time good. Or not. No, whatever, the 30th time. And it's still awesome. And you still see new things in it. And it's really, really great. And Jamie Foxx, but he wasn't nominated for that, right? Is that right? He wasn't nominated for an Oscar for that, which is just insane.
I think Leo was, right? In supporting? Or no, Christoph Waltz was supporting.
Jamie Foxx was not nominated, which is just out of control because he gives an incredible performance.
Let me see. That's 2012, right?
Believe so. Right? Because that's between Inglourious and. No, yeah, it should be. And then it was
Jamie Foxx is so, I mean, obvious. It's obvious to say that he's had this amazing career and he's like all these great things he can do. He like won for Ray, obviously.
Insane multi-hyphenate. Like, the amount of things he can do well
is insane. He's been nominated for 2 Oscars.
Jamie Foxx is a human cheat code. He can do anything he wants to do. Mm-hmm. It is one of the more ridiculous human beings. Like, it doesn't matter what, like you said, acting, obviously fucking phenomenal. Singing, brilliant singer, comedian, impressionist,
hysterical.
Dancer. Like,
in 2005, he won for Ray. He was nominated for Collateral. He hasn't been nominated for anything else since, which is mind-boggling.
Did he get a Grammy nom for Gold Digger, for Best Feature or something? In that point, too,
I feel like he won for R&B performance by a duo or group for "Blame It" with T-Pain.
I forgot he was in "Blame It." Holy shit!
He does have a Grammy and he has an Oscar.
Fucking monster, dude!
Mansion. Somewhere it was Canson.
Someone's Canson. I love the Django pick. I really wanted that with my first. It's frustrating.
I wanted the Social Network. So
yeah. So "Blame Clemmer." Okay, so for mine, I'm just going to go with more. This draft, there's all these like high prestige movies I could go with. Like, I'm just going to go with ones that I just really like from this period. And I'll start out with Wolf of Wall Street. Just talking about one that comes from an all-time great director and one that's like super, super easy to rewatch. Still so funny. Still, like, that's one where you watch that and like Leo's great, obviously, but like every single other person in that is also like equally, or if not as like equally or better. They're so good. Jonah Hill, Margot Robbie, fucking what's his name? Like John Bernthal, cracking me up with every line he gives me, dude.
John Bernthal is so goddamn funny in that movie. Say hey to your sister for me.
Yeah, he's
lifting weights in his backyard, like on the worst
smoking a cigarette. And fucking even like Matthew McConaughey in that for 2 seconds and leaves a huge lasting impression. Oh, yeah. Like it's insane.
Kyle Jenner's super really good too.
Yeah, that's right. As the FBI guy, I forgot. Yeah. So many great scenes, great lines, great moments. It's a movie that I could rewatch a trillion times and one of my favorite Scorsese movies of the recent era, I guess, of the last like 20 years, I guess. That's got to be up there. And
it sucks. The thing that sucks about that movie is the fandom
and the
people who have hijacked that movie and turned it into something it isn't, and has, and in like response to that, has turned like people who watch films and talk about films, it's turned them against the movie.
Exactly.
But like the movie is still fucking great as long as you understand it. Like, if you understand that he is a, like, this is a fall from grace, like this is a man reaching the pinnacles, and then he gets consumed by his demons. And like, if you can understand that he is not a good person by the end of the movie, then it's phenomenal. But if you lionize him, then you're missing the whole fucking point.
It's American Psycho syndrome. Yeah, basically
the same thing happened with Wall Street, which I think is a better movie than Wolf of Wall Street. But everyone thought it was this like great like movie about like how like Michael Douglas is
Gordon, I want to be Gordon Gekko. He's the coolest.
He's a fucking awful guy. Like, you're right, Gooch. Like, they completely missed the point of the movie. I think this movie's a little long. Like, I get the point. Like, the hour 45 minute, we get it. I know he's greedy, it's bad. So like, to have another hour attack done after, I remember just thinking like, all right, it just felt so monotonous to me. I think it's a good movie. It didn't crack my top 23.
See, that's one where I watch it and I'm like, there's no scene. Like, I know it's long and you feel the length of points where I'm like, but I'm also at the point where I'm like, I don't know a scene I would cut from this. You know what I mean? There's no one where I'm like, oh man, this scene's like gratuitous or it's too much. Like, I'm like, I still think this scene is funny or good or at the very least worth watching.
Like, in theory, the stuff that you would cut for the story, if you wanted to keep the story intact and like the messaging intact, you would take out like the Quaalude scene. You would take out like, but those are scenes that I fucking love because they're so funny. Like, it's those Jonas funniest four sets he's out. Ever been. Yeah.
Oh, like, all that stuff.
So hot.
You know, I'll back-to-back Wolf of Wall Street with The Other Guys, one of my favorite comedies of all time, just because I don't want to come around on a turn. The Other Guys, I earnestly think it's one of the funniest I've ever watched and one of my favorite first watches, too. And one where every single time you watch it, you'll find a new line that'll crack you up. Like, it's insane. Another great cast down the line. Like, Wahlberg and Will Ferrell, like, at that point, I think neither of them, I was like, oh, like, I'm, or I guess it's Will Ferrell, but like with Mark Wahlberg, I'm like, okay, I get Mark Wahlberg. I don't need much more of him. But like, I think all of them were so funny, and every side character, whether it's like Marlon Wayans or Rob Riggle or fucking Steve Coogler or not Steve Coogler, Steve Coogan, right? Yeah. Is his name, the British actor. He was really fucking funny in this. Ray Stevens, who recently passed away, is the Australian dude. Everybody in this got a great line. And it's one I rewatched this movie a trillion times and find something new to laugh about. It's just brilliant. Adam McKay at his absolute finest to me.
Adam McKay, I don't know how many times that we have to bring it up on the pod. Come back to making fucking comedies. You're good. You're so goddamn good at it. Just come back and start doing it again.
Mm-hmm. He's too busy lecturing us about stuff. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. He's become a Twitter blue check mark, a walking check mark.
Yes. He's the human embodiment of a blue check mark. It's fair.
Yeah. That's so funny. He played Dirty Mike in The Boys. He's fucking talking about like hobo dick cheese or whatever, like in a Prius. Like it's stuff like that. Like I wish I don't miss like the super vulgar stuff, but like he was very witty in that movie. There was a lot of very smart lines, like even dumb things like Mark Wahlberg being a ballerina, like all that stuff, dude. Hey, I learned to make fun of those guys.
Just whips out like a triple pirouette.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever watched the blooper reels for that movie?
So good.
That's where when people say like Will Ferrell, like, isn't funny. He was just in funny movies and like had good write. No, Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell was fucking funny. Like you watch that blooper reel. Nobody can get through a single line with him. Like he's just making everyone laugh. Like, and he's improvising the whole time.
Exactly. Robbie, you're back up.
All right. Gosh, see, this is where it's going to sound like I'm just a film bro going through these, like the IMDb top 100 or like one of those annoying, you know,
she's about picking Birdman, aren't you?
Oh, no. But that is on my list. But I wouldn't say it's like in my favorites, but I'm going to go one of my favorites here. I'm going to go Interstellar. I know it's a movie you don't love, but I love Interstellar. I still do. I love Matthew McConaughey's performance. I love the way it's shot. I love the score. It brings me to, if not tears, it brings me to a nice little well, you know, in the eyes every single time.
I think they just put it on Prime Video, I think, just so you know.
I have it on Apple. I paid for it.
You paid for it?
That's one of those movies where I get home, and I've told you this, I'll come home like drunk or I'll leave the bar and just like I'll go home and immediately want to watch something. And half the time it's just not streaming anywhere. If it's not, I just buy it. It's like $8.
Buy the DVD, physical media. Yeah, man. Buy physical media. Don't trust companies. They don't like us. Get the real DVD. And you own it forever. You can be as drunk as you want.
They get scratched.
No, they don't. They're coming to case. What are you throwing the case around all crazy?
Yeah.
Ken Jack ran away.
But no, Interstellar. I love Interstellar.
It's a little long. You got it?
Here's a judgment. Okay. Yay or nay, The Game.
Oh, fantastic. Fincher, it's such a great movie. That will be in my top 100 movies of the 90s, but we're not even close to that yet.
Come and see.
Oh yeah, I mean that's one of the greatest movies of all time. I've never watched it.
Have you seen it?
I read the description and I go, not for me.
Yeah.
Clemmer bought this for me for my birthday. It's a very thoughtful gift. Great movie.
Wow.
Clemmer, yay or nay?
Love Parasite. Fantastic. The only problem was it came out on a year. There's too many good movies.
Police Story 1 and 2. You ever see it?
I have not.
That's a
must.
Seen
Police Story?
I have not.
Oh, it's awesome. You like Jackie Chan. I mean, if you like Jackie Chan.
Princess Bride.
That's a cool case. I'll say that.
Oh, yes. I love the Criterion.
Yeah, dude. It like opens up like a book. Like they have pages and stuff.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah.
I feel like you haven't seen many Korean movies, but Memories of Murder, one of my favorites. Oh,
dude, it's Memories of Murder. You got to watch that.
I got to see more foreign films. That's a blind spot for me. The Hidden Fortress.
Inspiration to New Hope. This is a movie it's based on, basically. You're missing some good ones, Clemmer.
I completely agree. That's on me. I need to broaden my horizons there because I'm very rarely disappointed. Like I'll watch them like, oh my God, this is so good. Why don't I do this more often? And then I don't do it again for like 6 months because I'm an idiot.
The issue with watching foreign movies at home is you have to be incredibly locked in just because of the subtitles.
I don't mind that.
But it's like if you live in our world, you do have to check your phone quite frequently.
No, I shut it off. If I'm watching a movie, I shut it off. I can go 90 minutes without a tweet about how the Mets are driving me crazy. I think the world will survive. Like, it's fine. Like, I can watch the movie. I think it's okay.
I think that's like 50% of why I love going to the movie so much is like I have an excuse to literally just shut it off.
Deep unplug, okay. Yeah.
Like I can't do it. It's out of my hands. Don't blame me. Blame the people around me.
Chris, you have back-to-back.
Yeah, so like I said, Goose picked the wrong Nolan movie there. The correct answer is Inception. That'll be my next pick.
It was next on my list.
It's the first movie. I mean, Memento is amazing. That blew my mind. Insomnia? Is very good. Robin Williams and Al Pacino. It's a good movie. It's fine. But Inception was a whole different level. I remember like walking out of the movie theater. I was still like trying to piece it all together in my mind. Very good performance by DiCaprio. I don't know if it's my favorite. Like it's not my. It's number two on my list. It's not, maybe not my second favorite movie of that. But like, I think it's like the second most important and the second most like in a bizarre way meaningful to me. I think about it a lot. It just means a lot. Now here's one that's a movie that I think about a ton, and it's funny like. Social Network is a true story, and so is my next pick, Moneyball.
Back to Inception.
Yeah.
This got brought up. I don't know why it got brought up. It was in our subreddit, and someone said it's a smart movie. Actually, I think it was in our LCB comment section. Someone said Inception's just a smart movie for dumb people. And they use that as a negative. I think that is a positive. I think one of Nolan's biggest strengths as a director is he takes these like insane, complex ideas and he has perfect exposition. I think his exposition works so well and so naturally in the movies and it gets dumbed down perfectly that anybody can understand it. I think he's basically like that perfectly.
He's like a bird that's like chewing up the food so that the babies can eat it. Basically, like, so it's digestible to the baby. That's him. And, like, he does it perfectly every time, basically. Tenet is the only time I think he's ever struggled with that.
Yes.
In every other movie, I think he's done a perfect job.
I mean, we all dream. Like, it's, I think it's something that we all can relate to on some of. We've all had dreams. I've had, like, layered dreams before. I'm sure you guys have, too, where you dream and you're inside the dream and it gets kind of complicated. It's like a puzzle. So it's, like, super relatable. And I don't know if you're smart or dumb, but it's a movie. Like I said, a movie I think about quite a bit, and it was fantastically done, so creative. And then, like I said, my next pick is Moneyball. Just great performances. The Brad Pitt, Philip Seymour Hoffman's great. Just brilliantly directed, and it does tell a story that means a lot to me. I'm a big baseball stat nerd guy. I love the book. I think the movie did a fantastic job adapting that. I just wish the director, who I can't think of off the top of my head right now, would direct more stuff. He doesn't direct movies ever. Bennett Miller. It drives me crazy. I wish this guy doesn't work. I don't know why he's so good.
One of the perfect things about Moneyball is the fact that they didn't try to show you too much baseball. You know what I mean? Like that was that was like almost an afterthought, which in a good way, you know what I mean?
But it has to do with baseball. They show you clips of like history and like they show
yes,
you, they
that part's
show,
great.
It gives you like, I'm obviously a huge baseball guy. It gives me just a more, fine enough baseball, but also someone can watch it that has no interest in baseball. They can still take something away from it. I hope.
Yeah,
there's nothing worse than I'm glad you're not one of these, Clemmer. The baseball nerds that get mad about like the inaccuracies with the movie, in terms of like how they display like the players and who they choose to focus on.
Right.
who was it, Barry Zito, that they just don't even feature?
Zito, Mulder, and Hudson were the reason those teams won to some extent. Yeah. But it's also just like but that's not the story. And only muddies. You read the book and it goes into some of that detail, but. The story is about how this guy changed baseball forever, and he did, with using a different method, and he fought the system. It's not about Barry Zito. Like it's about this guy's journey. And exactly. I think it pulled fantastically well.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan. I love the scene where they're talking to Hatterberg, and he's like, yeah, it's playing first base. It's not hard at all. Isn't it, Ron? Tell him, Ron. And Ron's like, it's incredibly hard.
Right.
Very funny scene.
It's a great scene.
So Inception and Moneyball back to back. Robbie.
Great picks. Those were all in my top five. I'm going to go. I don't know if I would have taken this in the top three, but I don't want it to fall. And I'm going to go with Whiplash. That is Damien Chazelle at his most. Damien Chazelle doesn't get too lost in the sauce like maybe he did with Babylon. Miles Teller is fucking brilliant, but even more importantly than that, J.K. Simmons, just dynamite. Just fucking dynamite, putting on a show. And then just shot brilliantly. Just beautifully shot. The music works perfectly. The jazz, like, not only it having the jazz score, but focusing on the obsession of an artist. Like, it all is – it's amazing. And it's paced really well. Some dramas, they'll lag. And, like, you'll be like, this is a great movie. I'm watching a great drama. But it's like, holy fuck, this is a tough 2 hours to get through. No, Whiplash whips by, to make a pun.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Where are we with Miles Teller? Are we disappointed in his career? Because he's so good in this movie. I think he's very talented. I think he's very good. I just wish he did more stuff. Where are we?
I don't think he's taken a challenging role since then. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's taken many roles that have challenged him to the point where he gets a performance like he had in Whiplash, you know?
So obviously he did Maverick, but what else has he done?
Like, not challenging. He's like the character with like the third most speaking lines in that movie.
Yeah, he did 5 years off. I don't, you know, that's fine. He's got the money, go for it. But I just, I don't know. I think he's a really, really, really good actor. He even in Maverick, kind of a goofy kind of, you know, it is what it is, but he's very good in it. I don't know. And it Whiplash, like you said, Gooch, it's so good. And J.K. Simmons is amazing. But Miles Teller really is the heart of that movie. And he carries that whole movie. It's brilliant.
Yeah. It's just what came after, which is, it's like some rom-coms. And
the Fantastic Four movie didn't work.
And it stunk. But that's another, that goes back to like the more like artistically challenging things. Okay, so I got back to back. I'll start out with one of my favorite action movies of all time, one that I think restarted the genre, which had become extremely stale over the course of the 2000s to 2010, like the aughts or whatever you want to call it, which is John Wick. I think John Wick absolutely changed the game. And it took cues from some international movies that were doing the same thing. But like that movie showed you that like action movies don't need to be this extremely formulaic sort of like bullshit. You know, it's how it's going to look A to B. It's like you get all these stuntmen together. These stuntmen fight, choreograph this to make this look real, feel real. Keanu's super dedicated doing all this like training, whether it be like judo or gunplay, whatever. He's like, everybody was super dedicated to making that movie as special and as real and authentic feeling as possible, while also remaining like the larger than life, if that makes sense. Established a super cool world and super cool lore and all of that. Love John Wick. I think it's one of the greatest action movies of the last, like, I don't know, a few decades. And started a franchise that went 4 for 4. That's just not something that happens.
I still haven't seen it. I need to see it.
No, Clamor, what?
Haven't seen John Wick or John Wick 4?
John Wick 1. Now, I've been hesitant because of the dog scene. Now, you guys, last time we talked, we did talk about this, and you guys told me it wasn't that much of the movie. I'll say this. So we had to tape 2 double play episodes this week because Brandon will be he's moving, so he won't be available next week. So I'll have time. I'm going to watch John Wick next week, I promise. I know it's a huge – I need to see it. Everyone loves it. Everyone I respect loves it. Critics love it. It's simply because of the dog stuff. I've been really apprehensive. But I am going to sit down. I am going to watch it next week, I promise.
All right. I got the Blu-ray if you need it, but I'm pretty sure it's on HBO, if I remember right.
Okay, yeah. I'll find it wherever. I'm sure. I know it's going to be great. I know. I just need to sit down and watch it.
It's going to blow your mind, dude. It's going to blow your mind.
I know. Huge blind spot for me. I know. Maybe it'll open this whole new door for me of 3 more John Wick movies that are really good. I don't know.
Exactly.
But I will watch next week, I promise.
I'll follow up John Wick with another movie that I really love and also did critically really well, which is The Fighter. I love The Fighter. I'm a big fan of The Fighter. Was that next on your list?
It was up there.
I love The Fighter, man. And like, that's another one. Like I was just talking about the other guys, Mark Wahlberg. Like, I wouldn't go to a movie for Mark Wahlberg, but Christian Bale is a dude I will be at the theater no matter what for. And obviously he wins supporting for this. Melissa Leo, incredible in this, but Bale, I think, is the big star. And he's one where like, watching that movie, he like breaks your heart like in a huge, huge way. And like, I think it hits every emotional note you want out of a movie like this. And also it was like kind of like a start of like an era of very good fight movies too, in like the early 2000s that came out, including others without tipping picks. But I love The Fighter. I'm a massive fan.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, I grew up not that far from Lowell. I mean, like an hour away, but like it kind of hits some of those notes pretty well. Lowell's a pretty tough town, and they kind of show that. And I just think his journey is great. Amy Adams is really good. I love the stuff with the sisters, like, and how like the families are fighting. I don't know. I just really enjoyed that movie. Every time I sit down and watch it, I'm immediately involved. I love it.
His family members, I can't remember his sisters and who played his mom. I think they're relatively unknowns, but they were fantastic.
Melissa Leo had been on Homicide, which is a show on NBC before that. She wasn't a movie star, and she wins an Oscar.
Yeah, so, you 100% believe that they are just this family in Boston in, what is it, the 80s? 90s?
90s, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, David O. Russell might be a piece of shit, but...
Make some damn good movies sometimes.
Make some damn good movies.
Back up.
Back up. I want to get some comedy mixed into my list, so I'm going to go 21 Jump Street. Maybe one of the only really great comedies from this decade. Like, great. I think 21 Jump Street. Just fucking hilarious. Lord and Miller. I mean, Jonah Hill. We talked about him yesterday on the bracket. Like, obviously can do the drama stuff, but I think he's just so goddamn funny. This is where he belongs. Like, you're kind of robbing the world of your comedic talents by not doing this shit.
Channing Tatum, too, to a degree. That was like a proof positive that a dude that you might think is one note is super funny.
Yes. He's... You punched a gay black kid on the first day of school?
Yeah. Turn that gay ass music off, and he's like, he is gay. That's super insensitive. Like, that was such a perfect moment.
Brie Larson. I love that.
Yeah. Very funny in that. Oh, yeah. God. Were you more of a, I'm assuming you were more of a fan of the Johnny Depp version, Clemmer?
No, Johnny Depp version was kind of cheesy. I haven't seen the movie. There's another one I haven't seen. I haven't seen 21 Jump Street because the original show was kind of, it was one of the first shows Fox had was a hit. But it was always kind of like this lame, cheesy show to some extent. Good acting from Johnny Depp, but like, no, but I haven't seen this version. I probably should. Everyone raves about it. This is another blind spot for me.
It's very, so very funny. Yeah. Okay. It's one of my favorite comedies of this era.
What's his face? God damn it. Who plays the lead cop?
Ice Cube.
Not his name. Yeah. Ice Cube. God damn it. I wanted to say Eazy-E, then I was like, Eazy-E wasn't a fucking actor. he was hilarious. I mean,
Korean Jesus. Really good. Funny ass movie.
So 21 Jump Street. Keep going.
Clemmer, back to back.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Argo. This is... I don't know. I really like this movie. Big Ben Affleck fan when he directs. I loved Air. There's another one on this list here. Maybe it'll follow me. Maybe it won't. But Argo is told differently. It could be a really boring movie. But he tells it. And I love how when Ben Affleck directs both Air and this, it's not a biopic. He's talking about a very specific moment in time. And that's true with Social Network as well. Truth, Moneyball, might just be my personal preference. But like when you watched Ray, you're stuffing 80 years of someone's life into 2 hours, 20 minutes. It's impossible to tell a good story. But if you tell a small sliver of time when something's really important, you can tell a great story. And I think Argo does that really well. It's funny to me that I've picked 4 movies so far and 3 of them are nonfiction. I don't know what that means or what that says, but I don't know. Argo is a really interesting story that I did. Maybe know enough about when I watched it for the first time. I was blown away. The fact that Affleck was not directed for Best Director is obviously a huge, it's a crime. I really enjoy this movie. Do you guys like Argo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. Yeah. That's one where
Argo, fuck yourself.
Argo, right. Fuck yourself. That's another movie with a really, really just perfect cast for that group, like the group that was based in the United States, like Alan Arkin, right? And Goodman, so funny and or so good, I guess, in that. But really like that too, because that's a story like I didn't know anything. I knew about the Iran hostage crisis, you know what I mean? But like, I didn't know anything about that. And so like the story was new to me and fresh. And like, even though like the second I hear about it, I Wikipedia it and we're in like, oh, it worked and everything like that, I still felt tense and felt like the anxiety that they were going through. Oh, which is a credit to Affleck.
Did a great job in that movie. Yeah. Affleck did a great job there.
Especially the airport. Oof, that got me good.
Airport, It's I think maybe the best date movie ever. You could say maybe some people might say Forgetting Sarah Marshall is the best date movie ever, which is fair. The other one for me is Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, fuck.
I think that is just a fantastic.
I thought I was going to get that.
It's something for everyone. Like Jennifer Lawrence's character is great and so likable. And I'm so glad she won the Oscar for that. She was fantastic. And then Bradley Cooper is so good in this. Like the mental health stuff he's battling through, it feels, you know, you can feel him lose control and the way it's directed, you know, with David Russell again, right? So like it just kind of creates that tension and that uncomfortability. Like when he's with his parents, you like, it's almost like cringy and you feel so bad for them. They all are so helpless. And then it ends on a great note. And like, it makes you feel good when you walk out of the theater. I don't know. Silver Linings Playbook is just such an enjoyable movie. Incredible soundtrack too.
That too. Yeah. Great point. You had it on your list next, Gooch?
It was, yeah. I mean, I thought I would get it literally two rounds from now, but I really wanted it. I wanted it. No, when you said The Fighter, I actually prefer Silver Linings over
me too.
The Fighter when it comes
it's close,
to
though. They're both great. I mean,
they're both great, yeah. But in terms of enjoyability, I've sure. rewatched Silver Linings Playbook so many goddamn times.
You're up, Gooch.
Okay. Ooh. Let's see, what do I have on my list? I'm trying to diversify. I'm gonna go with good right here. Let's take Ex Machina. Let's take it.
Early. You definitely could have gotten that later.
Yeah, but I really love it. I've talked about it so many times. I really love that movie. I men stunk, but boy, oh boy, was this, when I first saw this, like I'd heard it was good, but it blew me out of the water. I wish I'd seen it in theaters, didn't see it in theaters, saw it at home. Still just phenomenal. Alicia Vikander, phenomenal. Oscar Isaac doing his little dance, so goddamn funny. So intimidating, mm-hmm. terrifying. Like it's one of the very better scary. Shot movies, I think, from this like 5-year period in terms of like, it's almost like, it's almost like The Thing, where you get this just enormous cabin fever from it. Like you shouldn't, but you do.
Really good cast in that. Ex Machina off the board.
I almost took the Adjustment Bureau there, but decided to hold off.
That movie has left zero cultural impact other than people making fun of it for not having seen it.
Making fun of it, talking about how good it is.
I got back to back. I'll start with... I knew I could get this late, so I waited on it. Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy, my personal favorite Marvel movie ever. I think just such a brilliantly funny movie that also has all like, the other beats you want, like good action, good drama, too. I mean, the opening 5 minutes of the movie is a kid losing his mom to cancer, and like you're cracking up 5 minutes later when they have adult Chris Pratt as Star-Lord doing crazy shit on whatever that planet was. So, like... a lot of like roller coaster of emotions that feel smooth at the same time. And a movie I think you could enjoy no matter what you're in the mood for. And like with Silver Linings Playbook, one of my favorite soundtracks of a movie ever. It's just unbelievable hit after hit after hit after hit. One of my favorites ever. I know you're a fan too, Gooch. I don't know, Clemmer, though, how you feel about it.
Yeah, I don't really like it. I think even the soundtrack to me is basic bitch. It's like, maybe it's because I'm older and I just heard these songs a million times, but like that's nothing, there's not that many creative, like that is basically the classic rock playlist of any station in the 90s or even early 2000s.
And it rules.
It's great, yeah. But I've heard those songs so many times, I'm like, I get, like, maybe, I said, maybe if you're a little older, you just heard it a million times, so it didn't do anything for me.
Chaka, hookah, hookah, hookah.
Yeah, like that song's been in my life forever. I can't stop this feeling. I don't need to hear that again. And the story itself, I thought was not particularly, I don't know. It's too much CGI. It didn't do it for me. Like, there's Marvel movies I do enjoy quite a bit. Iron Man's fantastic. This one, I didn't really get the hype. But it might just not for me.
I'm a big fan. The only downside is the villain isn't particularly great. But, like, that's so over that's so, like, to me, overlooked because everything else is so great, in my mind anyway. And I'll back to back that with another one of my favorite movies, a very small one, very intimate, but also just like, I don't know how to explain it, just a vibes movie. Just a great vibes movie that I could watch any day of the week, which is Chef. Chef is one of my favorite movies from this era. It's like, it's weird to describe because, like, I don't know what, I'm not gonna be like, oh, this is the most dramatic movie ever. Oh, this is the funniest movie ever. It's none of those things. It's just a movie that is extremely fun and easy to watch. And I love everything about that movie. It makes me hungry watching make that goddamn grilled cheese or the Cubanos, like all that stuff. It's just like a weird slice of life is the wrong way to put it too. Like, there's no way to really, for me to pigeonhole it into like any particularly like him being strong at one genre. It's just, I love that movie, man. All time great vibes movie.
Yeah. It's a little bit like Air, where it's just, I don't know if I feel like I'm hanging out with my friends or if it's just like, it's just a casually great movie to enjoy. And like Chef is so, I found it randomly on Netflix one day. I was bored. I put it on. It was like 90 minutes or something like that. And I had a huge smile on my face the entire time. I don't know. It's just a fun, you're right. You can put that on any time. If you don't have, if you're not happy when that movie's over, then you don't have a soul. You don't have a heart.
Zero soul.
Like, that is such a fun movie.
Sneaky, yeah. And such like, a stacked cast too.
Yeah,
in small roles. Yeah, right? He's the restaurant owner. Yeah, and like ScarJo is the love interest, and I think was it
Robert Downey Jr. Vergara in there.
RDJ and Sofia Vergara. Yeah, and John Leguizamo is his sous chef. Like, it's fucking great. Bobby Cannavale, right? Is I think the guy that takes over for him or something.
John Leguizamo said what he gained, like not him, but personally, but John Favreau gained like 60 pounds. Like literally 60 pounds.
I wouldn't blame him, dude. That would be me if I was on that set too. Robbie, you're up.
All right. I'm going to take back to the more artsy stuff. I'm going to take Birdman. Birdman is, by all accounts, like, it is very much like letterboxed account, like filmy. Like, it is.
It's a technical masterpiece. There's no way to get around that.
It's stuffy, but it is brilliant. It's a brilliant movie. Alejandro Iñárritu, it's his best movie. I like it way more than The Revenant. And way more Gravity? Than Bardo. I think it's a Bardo, lot better than Gravity.
Bardo stung.
Fuck Bardo. Fuck Bardo. Is Gravity the only title, by the way, that he's done where he doesn't have I guess The Revenant too. The Revenant didn't have a weird subtext. I'm talking about he has a tendency to do the
right in parentheses.
Yeah, Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
Yeah, even the title's pretentious with this one though, right?
Like, it's a pretentious ass movie, but I think it's fucking awesome. I really love that movie. Emma Stone, great.
Michael Keaton's very good.
Zach Galifianakis is great in that movie. Ed Norton shows up. Ed Norton playing Ed Norton.
Yeah.
Right.
Being just an asshole, like loser, like Hollywood actor or stage actor. I think it's a phenomenal movie. I was trying to hold off on taking it because it obviously is not going to gain me any favor once we put this graphic out. Because I think most people think that's like just they think it's very pretentious, but I still think it's great.
It is great. No, there's no two doubt. There's no two ways around that, right?
It's brilliantly made. I don't really care for the story.
It's a technical masterpiece. That is undeniable to anybody. You know what I mean?
I think the story is great too. Like, it's this weird, almost, it's also like self-referential onto Keaton's career at this point where he had taken, you know, like, the fucking Birdman is Batman. Like, say what it is. Like, and ever since then, Keaton's been on just this run and this catanaissance.
That started with The Other Guys, by the way.
Yeah, started with
The Other Guys. The Other Guys is so funny. The Bed Bath & Beyond manager.
Hey, don't go chasing waterfalls.
Yeah, the TLC. So stupid, but so funny. Have you ever seen, Clem, have you seen The Other Guys?
I saw bits and pieces of it. I need to sit down and watch it. I saw it when I was pretty drunk one night. I need to go back. I'm thinking about it now, and there's like stuff I don't remember at all. In the movie. But then I don't. Yeah. You're mentioning other people like Marlon Wayans. I don't remember him in the movie at all. So
I might be the wrong Wayans. Might have been Damon Wayans. I forget. One of the Wayans brothers.
Okay.
He's got and Rob Riggle. But his son's a gay DJ.
He's like, he's like, "Hey, Chief, how you doing?" He's like, "Son's gay. That's great." Like or buy. I forget what it was. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, so Birdman, man. Chris has back to back.
All right. So this is the best movies of not like the most rewatchable.
It could be either.
Really be whatever you make it, I guess.
I have to. It's the most like one of the most brilliant movies I've ever seen. But man, I don't want to watch this one again. But I gotta pick it. I guess 12 Years a Slave. Like
that's hard watch.
It's such a tough watch. But I don't know if a movie like I don't know like seeing someone who was free then get slaved makes it so much. I say more powerful, but more relatable because we're all free and we all can understand that. So then imagine, I think that's what the brilliance of this story and brilliance of this movie, apart from just the insane acting and the great directing. Mm-hmm. But it's like, oh, we can all kind of imagine ourselves in this situation. Like you're just going to work, you're doing your life, you're going about your life and all of a sudden you're swooped out and now you're stuck. And it's terrifying. It's horrible, but also kind of, I don't know. It was like one of the most powerful movies I've seen, if not the most powerful movie I've seen from this 5-year period. So I have to take it, I think. But man, if I own the DVD, but I don't know if I want to watch it anytime soon because I don't want to feel those, you know, it makes you cry. It makes you feel horrible. Like it's just, it's amazing. That was only what, 175 years ago, we were doing this to each other. I think I have to pick it. It's an amazing movie.
Great cast outside of Chiwetel Ejiofor too. Like he was obviously incredible in it, but then like Benedict Cumberbatch for 5 minutes, incredible. Lupita Nyong'o steals the show big time. Yeah. So good.
She won the Oscar.
And Fassbender.
Yeah, Fassbender is really good in it.
Really, really good. Yeah. Excellent movie. 12 Years a Slave first and what's the second?
I'll lighten it up a little bit. I'm going to take – that's not hard to do.
Come on.
I'm going to take a movie we were just talking about, Ken Jack, and this is something that is a really interesting movie. It was fun. It makes me think. Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, fuck. I saw what I get with my last pick.
Like, I don't know if it's the best movie. Like, I have it 12th on my list. There's a couple movies we haven't taken that I have ahead of it, but, like, I don't know. I can't not take it. Like, it's one of the, like, best movie theater experiences I had in that 5-year period. It's fun to see Tom Cruise do something that's a little bit different, like a sci-fi type thing that works. It's not shitty. And Emily Blunt's awesome in this. And
really good.
I don't know. It's a great premise that they execute perfectly. I really like this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being able to watch the video game, but better. I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? It feels like a video game, but it's like incredibly well done.
It set the stage too for the McQuarrie, Tom Cruise friendship that turned into later now sort of Top Gun 2 and obviously Mission Impossible and all this other stuff. So it is a great thing that it happened and deserved more acclaim. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it happened about it when it came out, but it was a fucking awesome, awesome movie. That is just like one of my favorite sci-fi.
It deserves more respect. Yeah. That's why there's three I have in front of it that haven't been taken yet, but I have to take it.
I feel like, I feel like it didn't really blow up. It made, I'm looking at it now, it made $300 million, $350 million at the box office. But I feel like it didn't get like the respect it deserved until it was on TNT like 3 years later. Exactly. And then people started to watch it and catch it like on TV. And then they're like, oh, this movie fucking rules.
Mm-hmm. It's weird. I don't know what it is. Sci-fi is weird with that. Like we always talk about Dread, which is also in this period, by the way. But I don't think either of us are going to.
No,
maybe if you get it, I'm not going to take it. But Dread, another one. Like there's just sci-fi movies that fall between the cracks as far as like, hey, go back and think of like the best sci-fi movies of the last 10, 20 years, and like there's some that just fall through because there's maybe the genre is oversaturated with Star Wars and Marvel shit that you could consider sci-fi, like, you know what I mean? So I don't know. It's weird. But Edge of Tomorrow, one of my favorites. What they call it first? Live, Die, Repeat?
Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah.
That was also
the problem.
That was a bad title.
That's a bad name. I think Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow, it's the worst fucking name.
Edge of Tomorrow is super generic.
Edge
super
of
generic.
Tomorrow? It's stupid.
Live, Die, Repeat. I don't know.
Yeah, but Edge of Tomorrow sounds like a emo band. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
like that's a band that was awesome. That band would open for My Chemical Romance, without a doubt.
Yes. All right, Gooch.
Your second to last pick.
Second to last. All right. So I'm going to take Scott Pilgrim here. I don't know if you guys would have taken it, but I do want it. I love Scott Pilgrim. Back to the rewatchability, insanely rewatchable. talking about a cast with Chef. This one, the cast is ridiculous on this movie.
Yeah.
Fucking ridiculous. And it's a sneaky, a comic book movie. Very random.
Yeah, it is.
But, and the soundtrack rules. Like, it just has so much flair to it. There's so much to like and just enjoy, to feast upon. It's a lot of fun. I mean, we just did the Michael Cera interviews coming out Monday or Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So Tuesday. You'll have that to listen to. Michael Cera, phenomenal in this. I love that, by the way, he sleeps in a bed with Kieran.
Rory Culkin. Yeah, Kieran Culkin.
Yeah. Right, Rory Culkin. Yeah, no, not Rory. yeah, no, I love that movie.
Really good pick.
I was just too old for. I watched it. It's not. I like Baby Driver more. If we're talking Edgar Winter, but
for sure.
I just like. I was just too old. I think if I was like 5 or 10 years younger, I would have loved this movie like you guys love it. I think I was just a touch too old for it.
Edgar Wright, I think, is responsible for so many of my like favorite movies. Like he's just. I was just watching Hot Fuzz last night. Like he's so fucking brilliant when he just puts his mind to making something just so creative. Dude, I'm a big Edgar Wright stan. Yeah.
That's the big thing. But
Edgar Wright, Edgar Winter is a musician. That's creative. Once again, I'm so my age there a little bit. Excuse me.
No, this is hot. This is Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, Baby Driver, World, and this is what is it? The World at World's End.
Last Night in Soho.
Last Night in Soho. I wasn't huge on that.
I didn't like the final act. He's so good at comedy.
Yeah.
The third act is very bad. But the first two acts are really good. I don't know.
I agree. First act was awesome. I really enjoyed that. Okay. My last two. I will make a request. Can I combine The Raid and The Raid 2 into one pick?
Yeah, sure. Sure. Do what you want.
The Raid and The Raid 2. Two of the best action movies ever made in history that doesn't get enough play because they're Indonesian movies, but they are also directed by an English director. But they are two of the best action movies ever. Eagle Waste has gone on to be in like every major action franchise. Joe Taslim has now been like Warrior. He was in Mortal Kombat. This movie set the stage for so many future action movies that draw off it. Like when you talk to a lot of action directors or stunt guys or any of these guys, like they'll all say like a big inspiration for them is the execution of The Raid and how good it was, and The Raid 2 as well. Some of the greatest hand-to-hand combat fight scenes you'll ever watch in a movie, period. And that's because the guys in the actual fights are practitioners, like real life practitioners before they were actors. Like they all are masters of silat, which is like an Indonesian martial art. It's fucking crazy. So I love those two movies. I know Gooch at least said you've seen them, right?
The Raid? No. I've never seen The Raid.
You never saw The Raid or The Raid 2? I know you didn't, Claire, but fucking Gooch, really?
I'm going to get around to it.
It's on HBO. That's a must, in my opinion. That's a must-watch action movie. Even if like you never watch an international action movie ever again, make it The Raid and The Raid 2.
I like international action movies. I think it works better. I think when you go to like foreign cinema, I think when you have a lot of action, it helps.
If you like international action movies, if you like international action movies, and you haven't seen The Raid, that's like being like, I love sci-fi, never seen Star Wars. You know what I mean? Like, that's how big The Raid and The Raid 2
are. Star Wars is a fantasy movie, so get fucked.
It's sci-fi. Let's not fucking kid ourselves. And then I'll end with The Avengers. The Avengers is one of the most culturally important movies of this period. It's one where maybe I get it. I get it. I know the reservations, but
it was amazing in the moment.
It wasn't even amazing in the moment for me, but
That was a huge benchmark moment for comic book movies, which have now taken over and become that too, just movie cinema in general. It's like a literal turning point in some ways for better and in a lot of ways for worse, but it is a massive, massively huge moment in the history of cinema, is that movie coming out and the success that it had. And for whatever it's worth, like us, at least me watching as a fan, I was like, this is fucking crazy. Like, I'm not even a big comic book guy, but seeing all these guys together on screen is absolutely nuts. And for it to be directed competently, which comic book movies, that was very rare, with the exception at that point of Iron Man, it was fucking crazy. And it was a great time to watch too, especially as a New Yorker watching it all happen in our city. It was like fucking, it blew up Grand Central. What's in it?
Sean Cleveland.
Yeah, but they blew up Grand Central and all these other great New York landmarks. But that it's a great movie, great ending, good humor for whatever that's worth, and just like perfectly stupid, but like interesting enough to hold your attention over that entire time period that they have. And it's cool seeing fucking Captain America and Iron Man like team up and do shit. Like that's fucking cool. I'm sorry, awesome. It just is. So I gotta go with the Avengers for my last pick.
One thing with the Avengers that I'll give it massive credit for: every character in that movie feels like their own character. Does that make exactly. sense? Like they all act like themselves. One of the bigger issues that Marvel has, kind of, they've kind of shifted into doing this, and more recently, is when these characters get together on screen, they all are the same fucking character at points. It's like Thor doesn't need to be the same person as Iron Man. Like they are two completely different personalities, come from two completely different worlds. Like they don't need to act the same. They feel like two completely distinct characters in that movie. So I do respect the Avengers for doing that.
Yeah,
and the team up shot is
iconic.
Yeah,
there's just a lot. I think a lot of moments from that which will stand the test of time as far as like how influential they were to the entire.
Will people like, go back and watch these movies like years from now? I don't think so. I think the it's too CGI'd. I think the humor is pretty weak. I know that people think it's funny. I don't know.
Marvel humor is like its own subgenre. It's weird. You know what I mean?
Goofy, nerd humor. It's not good. I don't know. I don't think it's very funny. I don't think it's very funny. I don't think the CGI doesn't hold up. And that's a problem with all of these. You know, some of these movies. You know, thank God for Mission Impossible, like we were talking about. I don't know. Do you think this is going to be something that people go back and watch 30 years from now for non nostalgia reasons? They actually go back and watch it to enjoy it? I don't think so.
I think everybody, anybody would be Infinity and Endgame would be the two that they watch versus watching, going back and be like, I need to watch Avengers again. Like they're going to be like, if I'm going to go back and watch a big team up movie with Avengers, it's going to be the other two. But those two don't exist if Avengers didn't work.
Right. And you're right, Kenjack. It was probably the most influential movie of this time period, right? For what it did, I think for worse, but you're right. It was incredibly important.
It changed the course of movies from that period, that point on. Like that, everybody wanted to get a taste of that sort of genre, if that makes sense. But I mean, I feel like there's so many movies on here that I think are better, without a doubt. Every single other movie, honestly, it was the last one on my list was Avengers. But every other movie on here that I have on my short list is a better movie. But none of them were even close to as important to the history of cinema as Avengers was, for better, for worse. Again, Robbie, your last pick.
My last pick. Oh, this is my last pick. I have to leave the Adjustment Bureau off. Fuck.
You absolutely do.
I'm not even kidding when I say I love that movie.
It's not good.
We haven't had a single animated movie taken, and probably for good reason. Wasn't a strong period for animated films, but there was one in the sea of mid, directed by one Gore Verbinski. That is Rango. No. I swear to God, I fucking love Rango. I'm taking Rango. Rango. Love it. Rango's awesome. Rango's fucking amazing.
But we'll get to it with the other picks we're leaving on the board here. But
Oh, I'm looking at the picks that we're leaving on the board. There's a Bong Joon-ho movie. There's a Denis Villeneuve movie. There's multiple. Darren Aronofsky movie. But no, my guy Gore, he delivered a banger. Rango. Gore
Verbinski, one of the oddest dudes in cinema. Just like the definition of hit or miss.
Oh yeah, he pushed the limits on Rango. Like cinematography wise, like in terms of animation, like you can pull stills from that movie and be like, holy shit, they did some really interesting things. I swear to God. You gotta be
the first person that's ever said that. It doesn't work in the animated space.
Oh, listen, ask any animation. Go ask it. I bet this is in Miyazaki's top 10 movies of all time.
For him to poop on, maybe.
For me to poop on. He says it just like that.
Yeah, exactly. He goes straight into the champion voice or whatever. Clemmer, your last pick and the last pick of the draft.
This sucks. I have three movies that I would love to pick here. I can only pick one. I'm going to go with my favorite of them. It's probably the weakest movie of the three, but it's my favorite and it's my list. So fuck it. It's what I do. And then I lose the draft by, you know, a million points. That's fine. I'm going to take The Town. I just enjoyed the hell out of this movie. I know it's not maybe the greatest film of all time, but Jeremy Renner is so good in it. The chase scene, the car chase scene in the North End is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. If you've been in the North End in Boston, you know, it's all one-way streets, it's super narrow. To shoot a chase scene there is like an incredible accomplishment. And I just like this story. I just really enjoyed this movie. I'm leaving off Black Swan and Captain Phillips. Those are the, I was between those three. And those other movies are better made. I'm not going to defend that, but I like The Town better, and that's what I'm taking. But I know I'm probably wrong.
No,
you're definitely not wrong. Great movie.
It's in, I have it higher like rated than Rango. Like it's in my – out of the four – yeah, it's the fourth highest rated movie I have left on my list.
I feel leaving Black Swan and Captain Phillips off, though. Like those two are just amazing accomplishments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was Black Swan. That was a great cast in The Town too. Like beyond Ben Affleck obviously being the star, but like Jeremy Renner, awesome in that. All the, like the little like local Boston actors guys that he cast, I think were excellent. And not just making a joke about RA who's in it, obviously, but like other dudes, like the guy who played like the Irish mob boss, like I think his name is Postlewaite.
It was the last movie he did before he died.
Yeah, he was excellent in that.
Chris Cooper's really good, and it's Ben Affleck's dad. Small role there.
John Hamm.
John Hamm's really good.
Blake Lively is so fucking hot in that movie.
She is insanely hot.
Oh my god, she's so hot. That's exactly funny.
They try to skankify her basically and make her seem like a dirty person, and it's like you just can't do that, Blake Lively. It just doesn't work.
It kind of made her hotter in a way. Like she's never not hot. Like she's like you can't right. You can't make her ugly. She's so beautiful.
Yeah.
What happened to Serena Vanderwoodson? Oh my gosh.
Excellent ending too. I really like the ending of The Town.
Yeah.
Me too. I think it's the best part. I legitimately think the best part is the very end when they're having the shootout.
Yep. And just like the I think that is like a shot where they're overlooking, not from the graveyard, or was it from the graveyard? I think, I don't know. It's a cool shot.
Garden?
It's a garden. Yeah.
But that was an excellent shot. All right. So we have our team set. We could do some honorable mentions. I mean, Nightcrawler had right near the top, and I never picked it. It was like right at the top of my list. It's so fucking good. And I was just like, I'm going for a goofier version of this draft.
Skyfall, Prisoners.
What We Do in the Shadows, one of my favorite comedies. Gone Girl.
Yeah.
You said a clear Black Swan. Fucking
True Grit. I mean,
yeah.
Boyhood.
Prisoners. Yeah, Boyhood's awesome.
Looper is another fantastic science fiction movie. I love Looper a lot.
Warrior, one of the best fight movies.
Another big one, The Adjustment Bureau. Left off.
Bridesmaids. Pretty
Bridesmaids,
funny.
Bridesmaids, yeah. That's like one Dark of the Knight most
Rises Bridesmaids. Very funny.
Bridesmaids Dark Rises very is funny. Not a great movie, but I do love some elements of it so much. It's my favorite superhero movie this time. Gravity, if it follows, is really good.
It follows, awesome.
It's one of the best horror movies I've ever seen. And then Secret Life of Walter Mitty is pretty good. I don't know.
Secret Life like guys. We're Secret Life guys.
No, that's we're doing 10 to 14, not.
We have a long-running bit about him.
We just keep acting like the movie hasn't come out.
Like we'll post a trailer for Walter Mitty and be like, "Coming this summer, Walter Mitty." What do you think of the trailer?
So stupid.
I really like that movie. I wish it would come out again. I'm on board with this bit. That's fine. It can come out again. I'll watch it again.
You know how like they drop a bunch of trailers like on Super Bowl nights. Like we'll just drop that in there and be like. First trailer for Walter Mitty.
That would make me so happy.
We should do that at Comic-Con, like when at SDCC, when that happens, just by posted, the panel just dropped Walter Mitty version 2.
Crazy Stupid Love also in here. In terms of rom-coms, I think it is very good.
I don't think I'd have that in my top 20 of this, or top maybe 30 of this era.
No, but I do love it. Hot Tub Time Machine.
I love Hot Tub Time Machine. So stupid. It's so funny.
Dude, the guy getting his arm cut off is such a good running gag.
One of my favorite running gags in maybe any comedy is that stupid goddamn arm.
The whole Alaska movie.
The whole time you're like, this has got to be the one.
Inside Llewyn Davis is on here. Moonrise Kingdom. Lincoln.
I just rewatched Moonrise the other night.
I'm going to see Asteroid City tonight.
Nice. I'm seeing The Flash tonight.
I wish I was seeing The Flash. I don't know. We'll see how Asteroid City is.
Dallas Buyers Club is a really good movie, but I feel like the part is greater than the sum with McConaughey in that, if that makes sense. Drive.
Leto, too.
Drive. Yeah, Leto was really good. What else we got on here?
Imitation Game. I love the Imitation Game.
It's a solid
movie. Very
sad
movie, though.
22 Jump Street. Also very funny. Rush, Force Majeure, very funny. Oh,
forgot about that. Easy A is a great movie.
The Master. Easy A, I love The Master.
Great movie.
How do you feel about The Master, Clemmer? I know you're a big Philip Seymour Hoffman guy. You ever watch that?
I have. I don't like it. I found
myself. You don't like Philip Seymour Hoffman in that?
And it's funny, like, the director's amazing. Philip Seymour Hoffman's amazing. I should, by all rights, love this movie. And I was just left like, is this it? This is not. I love Joaquin Phoenix. I was excited to see it. And I was left very underwhelmed.
I think Philip Seymour Hoffman in that is so good. His, like, every speech he does in that is, like, excellent. Fucking, when he just goes like, "Pig fuck!" Like, when he gets angry at the death dude. What else we got here? Skeleton Twins. I like Skeleton Twins a lot. King's Speech. King's Speech is like a movie that's good that I'll never watch again. I'll never watch again for the rest of my life and be fine with that.
It's a good movie. And it's fine.
Yeah. Kingsman: The Secret Service is one of my favorite spy action movies to come out. It's just perfectly dumb and great. Like, I love that movie. End of Watch. Like, fucking, what's his name? David Ayers. David Ayers has such, like, a cool filmography up until a point when it gets real bad, and that starts with Suicide Squad. Like, Fury, I love Fury. I thought that was a really cool movie.
His filmography is so good that it makes me believe the people who say that there is an Ayers cut that's really good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's fucking great. Horrible Bosses. I loved Horrible Bosses when that came out.
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Spacey, this is like, bad guy, very funny in that.
Clemmer brought it up right before we started. I was not expecting to find as many great movies as I found in this period. And I was like, oh, this is a treasure trove. Like, there's a million great movies here.
Never-ending list. Okay, so our lists are: Chris has The Social Network, Inception, Moneyball, Argo, Silver Linings Playbook, 12 Years a Slave, Edge of Tomorrow, and The Town. Gooch, you have Django, Interstellar, Whiplash, 21 Jump Street, Ex Machina, Birdman, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and Rango. I have The Wolf of Wall Street, The Other Guys, John Wick, The Fighter, Guardians, The Chef, Raid and The Raid 2, and The Avengers. I honestly, this is one of those ones where I have no clue where they vote, because sometimes people will vote, just be like, which one of these do I want to be on a stranded island with, even though that's not the criteria of the draft. And other people will vote based on what they actually think is the best list. And just like on a first look, I think you will probably win, Clemmer. Just based off first impression.
I've never even come close to winning. I think my best was like second place once. Like, and that was like, I think I got annihilated. So I would be shocked if I win anything.
I'll go nameless on the tomorrow.
Nameless?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go nameless on the Twitter one.
Perfect.
Yep. All right.
We'll be back next. We'll be back on Tuesday. We have interviews with Michael Cera and Sam Hargrave. Make sure to watch Extraction 2. Came out on Netflix. Yeah. If you're watching this, I believe it comes out tomorrow. Extraction 2 is awesome. Super, super fun action movie. It's fucking crazy. They have like a 22-minute long take that will blow your shit up. And I think we're just doing Extraction 2, right? Are we doing The Flash? Yeah, we're combining, Flash, yeah. If I remember correctly. So make sure you watch The Flash and Extraction 2. For next week, thank you, Clemmer, for joining. Until next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.